This is Christina, and I teach high school English in Honolulu, Hawaii. Welcome to School of Practice on Edutopia Radio.
Joe, tell me about this video of a math class that you brought today.
Well, we're going to see a wonderful teacher called Sarah Nolan, and she teaches fourth and fifth grade in California.
Today we're going to do an activity that is very similar to the activity that we did yesterday, where we have to find a number.
In this video, the students are learning about factors and multiples.
When the pennies are put in groups of two, there's one penny left over.
That's Stanford education professor and researcher Joe Bowler. She's walking me through a video of a math lesson that's designed to build reasoning and problem-solving skills. Okay, back to the pennies lesson.
How many pennies could there be? What does it mean when we say groups of?
What are you hearing and seeing in the way that the teacher introduces this lesson?
Well, she introduces it by sharing what the problem will be, which is they're trying to find out the number of pennies.
Okay. Can you give me an example just to make sure?
For example, there's groups of five.
She introduces the problem, but then she asks students, what do we mean by groups of? So she makes sure they understand the question, what they're being asked to do, and then she lets them go. Their own thinking is driving it.
And you can use anything you want, anything that you think you and your partner would need to solve this problem.
I'm Kristen Leong, an editor at Edutopia, and I'm also a former middle school ELA teacher. Today, we are talking about a powerful way to improve math outcomes through rich math tasks that invite students to reason deeply and become skilled critical thinkers and problem solvers. Now, you couldn't see that lesson Joe was just talking about, but let me tell you what I noticed. This wasn't your traditional stand and deliver lesson. The teacher helped students understand the problem, but she didn't tell them how to solve it. Students worked in small groups to find possible solutions. Joe is a longtime advocate for this approach to teaching math, which has a few key goals.
Students doing the thinking and not just listening to a teacher, collaborating, reasoning through ideas, listening to each other and building on each other's thinking, visualizing.
Joe is here today to help us understand how to get students working like this, with rich math tasks and plenty of deep thinking. The key, she says, isn't choosing the perfect curriculum. It's what you do with what you have. If you're already familiar with Jo's work, you may know that she has played a starring and occasionally controversial role in debates about how to make math education more effective for kids. She's also the author of several books, including two that have been especially influential, Mathematical Mindsets and Limitless Minds. Most recently, Jo was one of the lead authors of the revised California Mathematics Framework. Today, she'll share some smart, simple strategies that help students reason and engage actively with math. Plus, we'll ask Jo if we're teaching kids the math skills they'll need for future careers. Okay, let's get into it. I want to start by asking you to help us understand, why is deep thinking important for math, and how is this different from a traditional approach to math instruction?
What we know is many teachers think they have to rush students through lots of short questions. What happens is students can sometimes do those questions, but they're not really understanding. And they can go through a whole lesson of answering questions and not even tell you at the end of that what they were doing. It's really important that we slow down. Students will learn more from that deep work than they will from lots of smaller attention to small standards.
Now, you have written that encouraging deep math thinking is easier when you've got excellent curricula, but we know that that is not always an option. Teachers often have to work with required texts or lessons. However, you also say that there is a huge opportunity to create a better mathematical experience by adapting the materials teachers already have to use and creating rich tasks that engage kids in reasoning and problem solving. Why are those two skills so important?
Reasoning is really the essence of what mathematics is. I'm always amazed when I look at textbooks, I don't see any reasoning at all. Solve this question, complete this expression. These are imperative verbs that just say do this. So how do we get students to reason? We need to open up those maths questions and give students the opportunities to share their thinking. And
you know, I was a middle school humanities teacher, and as I'm listening to you, I'm like, the same is also true for our English language arts teachers.
That's right, yeah.
Right, that when we're asking students to reason and think critically, that that's really deep learning versus who is the protagonist of this story, right? Which would be a sort of a closed question.
Exactly.
And I'm also thinking back to the video that we just watched, and it seems like there are two key parts to rich math tasks. Students need to be thinking about why their approach makes sense, and they need to understand that there are probably multiple answers that could be quote-unquote correct.
And multiple ways of thinking about it.
Later on, we're going to break down some strategies that teachers can use to create deeper math experiences. But first, I want to talk about the Healdsburg School District in California that you've been advising for a decade. You didn't introduce new curriculum. Instead, you helped teachers create very specific math tasks that develop reasoning and collaboration skills. Now, I know the improved math outcomes in Healdsburg are from a combination of factors, but let's zero in on some examples of the tasks you helped teachers create.
So one of the ones I remember them using is we introduced fractions, and students actually get to look at different pieces of art and work out the proportion of different colors in the art. And then they end up making their own art to represent different fractions, and students get to see the use of fractions in something.
I love this lesson of using art to bring fractions to life for students. What's one more thing that would be especially easy to borrow from this district and replicate in their classroom?
Well, we know that a lot of students hate to make estimates, and they'll try and work it out exactly and round it off.
Wait, why do kids hate to make estimates?
I think maybe they just think it's another method they have to use, and they don't really see the point of it. So I introduced this idea of having teachers ask students, what is your ish number, before they calculate? And so it turns out this totally changes it for kids. They love coming up with their ish numbers. They're more willing to share their thinking because they know it doesn't have to be precise, but it also helps them think conceptually and deeply.
It takes a lot of pressure off, right? To say we're thinking three-ish, you know,
yeah,
instead of
right.
Like, I have to give a precise, I have to be exactly right or I'm wrong, right? This reminds me of rough draft thinking. This is when shift the focus in math away from getting the right answers and focus more on promoting risk-taking, revising thinking, and building deeper conceptual understanding.
Exactly. And students can also make it more personal. They'll talk about my-ish number. So that also helps make maths a more personal subject instead of a set of rules.
After the break, we'll walk through more strategies from Jo that encourage deep math thinking, and she'll address the question of rigor and fact fluency. Be right back.
Have you heard about Edutopia's free newsletter, The Research is In? Each month, our editors dig deep into the latest insights from the learning sciences and break them down to help you implement the findings in your classroom or school community. Want to take a look? You can read a recent edition and subscribe at edutopia.org/The Research is In.
Okay, Jo, let's talk about more of your deep math strategies. We touched on this next one already. Let's get into more depth now. Tell me about opening up questions to incorporate a wider range of solutions. So you're encouraging students to think about different ways of solving a math problem. Why is this important?
If we ask students, can you find the area of an 8x3 rectangle, which is a very common maths question, they're just coming up with a calculation that has one answer. But if we ask them, how many rectangles can you find with an area of 24, there are different answers. students have to be thinking about the relationship between length and width. So they're thinking more deeply about area, coming up with different visuals, changes the whole question. And it breaks apart that idea that maths is fixed with one answer and one method.
Let's move on to rephrasing questions. The key with this strategy is shifting away from traditional math questions like fill in the blank or solve the multiplication. What kinds of questions encourage the type of critical, expansive thinking you'd like kids to be doing in math class?
I more often will ask, well, how do you see it? Can you think about it a different way? Can you prove it to me visually? And so they have to go away and think about what would be a visual proof of this. And that means they're reasoning.
Why is rephrasing questions so impactful? This is such a small change, but it's really important. Why is that?
When we ask students, how do you see it? That's a wholly different kind of question that invites their own thinking, that puts the student in the driver's seat rather than just answering.
Because kids are going to need to grow up regardless of what field they pursue and be critical thinkers and be questioners, but they might not ever be stopped on the street and asked what's 19 times 24.
Probably not, yes.
The next strategy builds on what we just discussed, opening up narrow, prescribed math questions to invite reasoning. You call this one ask less and get more. So when you're working from a set of problems in your textbook, instead of taking a drill and kill approach, you're saying just pick one or two problems. Put students in groups to work together and have them use some of the strategies we've discussed, like estimation and visualization, to solve the problems. Can you give me an example of a narrow math problem and then tell us how you would transform it to make it a richer task?
Oh gosh, now a math question. Where do I start? And there might be a question where students are solving quadratic functions and doing them over and over again. And what happens is students really don't think about what they're doing. They're just following the mechanics of a method. You could instead ask students to get into groups and look at two functions and think about how they're different and similar and draw the functions and think about what they would look like.
If kids aren't working through longer problem sets, are we missing opportunities to build math fluency? In other words, are we losing rigor?
No, we're not losing rigor. A lot of people think fluency means speed, which actually it doesn't. Mm. What I think fluency means is being comfortable with numbers and being able to think about them in different ways. And that comes about when we teach students to be flexible with numbers, to think about them differently. We have a paper actually on our website that became very famous when we released it called Fluency Without Fear. And it shares the evidence that students don't need to be doing these blind memorization of math facts. They can be exploring math facts and visualizing them and thinking about them. So they still learn them, but they've learned them with understanding rather than blind memorization.
Okay, so we talked about how to use visualizing and estimating to encourage kids to reason their way through math problems. And we also discussed how you can move away from the kill and drill approach by choosing a small number of textbook problems and opening them up to encourage kids to consider multiple solutions. Now, there's one more strategy I want to talk about, and this one is a little more complex, so we saved it for last. The basic idea is that you ask students to use their intuition to solve a problem before you show them how to do it. Why is this so effective, this use of intuition?
We have found that it's more effective when students work on a task and encounter a need for a method. And I give an example in the Edutopia article of a problem that's called 36 fences. Students are asked, what's the maximum fence a farmer could make out of 36 fences? Well, that easily leads into trigonometry. So the students had time to encounter the problem and think about what different shapes might work. And then when they couldn't go any further, the teacher taught them trig. So it was super impactful for them. They enjoyed it. They learned it deeply. That is real rigor to me, that students know how to use something inside a problem.
That approach where students struggle with a problem before getting guidance from a teacher reminds me of something that you told our editorial director, Sarah Gonser, in 2021. You said, "The best times for learning are when you're struggling, and that's when your brain is on fire with activity." I'm curious, why does struggle lead to learning?
When you're on the edge of your understanding, making mistakes, correcting them, making more mistakes, that's when you're learning the most. So we need to recalibrate the way people think about struggle and make them understand that struggle's a really good place for learning.
I mean, it's that like I'm on the verge of that light bulb moment. I'm not lost far, far, far away and defeated. I'm not just blowing through this because it's so easy for me, but I'm about to get it. It's right
there.
That's
right.
Now, prioritizing reasoning and intuition before teaching a method of solving a problem touches on a math debate about the balance between direct instruction versus developing procedural skills. Catherine Mackey from the University of Florida School of Education argues that kids who are in the acquisition and proficiency stages of learning need a lot of repeated practice and explicit instruction. I'm curious, how do you think teachers can find a balance between developing fluency by practicing procedures and developing reasoning skills?
I would push back on that idea that kids need a lot of practice and direct instruction, because what we know actually is that students need to think deeply and to understand, and you rarely get that from direct instruction. Now, I also have the goal of students learning these standard mathematical methods, but I also have the goal of students thinking flexibly about maths, and those go together really well. Students can get those standard methods through rich, deep maths tasks where they get to use those methods and really learn them.
I mean, when we think about flexible thinking, the ability to bring in creativity to problem solving, I mean, these are life skills. These aren't just getting kids to the next math class.
And in a world of AI, that is where we need humans thinking critically, thinking flexibly. Those other procedural maths tasks can be done by machines better than humans.
I'd like to close by returning again to that 2021 conversation you had with Edutopia. You argued that schools need to overhaul not just how they teach math, but also the actual content being taught. Here's what you told us. The content we teach in maths was created at a time when we needed kids to be calculators, but the world has changed dramatically. Joe, if you could wave a magic wand, what is one change that you would prioritize that could make the biggest difference for math students in the future?
I would cut the content that teachers have to teach so they have more time to go into depth. We put too much on teachers when we say you have to get through all of this in a year, and that's what often causes them to rush through lots of short questions. So that would be my wish, if I could make one wish.
Here are three things I'm taking away from this conversation. One, if you're interested in bringing some of Joe's strategies into your math instruction, there are some low-lift ways to get started. Rather than asking students to solve a large set of problems, you could pick just a few and rephrase them to open them up. You might ask kids to think about how many different ways they could solve a problem and how they would prove their answers visually. Two, reasoning is the essence of mathematics, as Joe says, so it's important to find opportunities to build reasoning skills. You can use action verbs to ask your students questions like, "Why does your approach work?" or "Can you prove it to me?" And three, if you're thinking that inviting students to use their intuition to explore a problem before learning a specific method, like trig, reminds you of Manu Kapoor's theory of productive failure, you're not wrong. Kapoor's approach, like Joe's, emphasizes the value of struggle as a way of engaging kids in deeper, more meaningful learning. Special thanks to Stanford education professor Joe Bowler. We'll link to her excellent Edutopia article about deep math instruction in our episode notes, and we'll also include a link to the video you heard at the top of the episode so you can see that rich math lesson in action. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions, and let us know what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and a review. This helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Anne Noisani and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. Special thanks to Yuki Terada. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.